This is a production of Cornell University.
In the interest of time, we're going to go ahead and get started. Those of you that are still getting food, feel free to take your time. This way we can get some of the early agenda item formalities sort of out of the way so that BJ is going to lead us in a structured discussion. Just to let everybody know, I have another meeting, so I'm going to have to leave early. It's the Retirement Plan Oversight Committee quarterly meeting as a representative of the Employee Assembly. So I apologize. I will have to step away at about 12:45. And BJ will take over at that
point. Get our money, Greg. Get our money.
Yes.
We're not retired.
Are there any late additions to the agenda? Really? There's plenty of space.
Climate action plan summit stuff. But
so was it a report from the chair? Yeah. All right. Seeing no late additions other than what BJ and I have in our...
Can we discuss something that came up at the UA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do we want to do that in business of the day real quick? A little update?
We could.
Great.
Can we discuss if there was any response to the recent article, like what we responded to?
Sure. Great. Is there a motion to approve the minutes or any additions, subtractions, changes that we'd like to see?
Second.
Is there any dissent? I see no dissent that carries unanimously. In terms of business of the day, we can talk maybe about the Sun article first. So a couple things happened. It was just a big sort of mess that got even bigger with not understanding, not clear communication, really not that good a quality of journalism. You know, taking things out of context, not understanding the difference between staff and faculty. I apologize to Mary because she didn't directly come out and say that the Sun was here. That was sort of our oversight. I thought that it was sort of implied, but I apologize for that on our behalf, on my behalf, really. But it really was... It wasn't a good representation of what we're working for. You know, I know I heard people specifically in my building, and I would be curious to see if anybody heard anything from other people about why is the Employee Assembly talking about faculty development and that sort of stuff. It did come up. So I thought that was interesting. I appreciate BJ and Gina working diligently to help correct it. Gina really stepped in with her office and her role and Mary's office to make sure that the Sun was brought to the table, and they had a little conversation with Mary, and then BJ was quick enough with his typing fingers to put together an eloquent response. So thank you to both of them. You know, so I don't know if we want to have a quick discussion on it, or if people had thoughts or concerns from what came from it, or if anybody wants to add anything.
Does everyone know what happened?
I don't.
Okay, so there was a Sun article from our meeting with Mary Opperman that basically took a lot of the quotes just really out of context, and then just like things were just mismanaged. Like we were talking about the employee survey, they referenced it as the housing survey. There was just all kinds of things that were going back and forth. They were talking about, you know, we talked a little about the rotational programs from the department. Mary was quoted in the Sun as saying, oh, we're going to do faculty rotational things where faculty rotate between buildings and departments. Like, just a lot of things that were not very accurate. And so...
And you were quoted.
I think Mickey was going to say...
You're worried about faculty advancement and growth where, you know, there's plenty of that already. And
yeah, that's the farthest thing from Michelle. I read it like, oh, that's not true.
It was weird because Mary was here, the meeting was here. I thought it was an excellent meeting. Where all the context came from.
They didn't put any content in here that was at all informational or helpful to anybody.
Yeah.
And I've since started reading the Sun more and the journalism.
So I know Gina met with the editor-in-chief, and so I believe we're going to try and do something in the future with the fund just to get more of a, like, hey, this is what staff members do on campus. This is what the employee assembly does, just to kind of get that ball rolling there, too. So hopefully if we're more proactive, this will be avoided in the future.
I have to say they were very receptive to the editor-in-chief thing immediately. I met with Mary Hoffman, who wanted it corrected right away. But as you see, with that, it was in addition to making the corrections for them, because one of the rights was, you know, employer or interplay the faculty and staff. And students just don't really have an idea of what staff do and who they are, and so they're going to do a future article on it.
So I will say a small point is that there are some positives to my mind in that students don't realize there is a distinction. They just kind of consider all staff together. And so when they talk about people making an impact on their lives, typically they ask about faculty. So in my mind, I think it's more of students are recognizing there is an impact of staff members on their experience while they're on campus. They might just kind of assume that we are all just teachers and faculty members. And so I think that's good for us. It shows that staff members are making an impact on students. We just have to help clarify who those people are. So.
But, yeah. And again, just to reiterate, we've run into this in the past. It could be announced in the second quarter. And it's unfortunate because I don't want people to not participate in the discussion.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is sort of that fine balance of how do you announce your colleague's presence. You know, like last time they were here when David was here, David's really good about saying, oh, and, you know, welcome my colleagues from the Sun. And he just sort of does it in a nonchalant way, but trying to find that so people still feel. And if people do feel uncomfortable, knowing that you can say something and ask to go into a closed session so that we can have off-the-record discussion, you know, knowing how to use the system that we have is important. So if anybody at any time does feel uncomfortable with any visitor in the room, you know, just sort of know that you do have the invitation to ask for, you know, an opportunity to sort of go off the record or go into closed session.
One thing that I would suggest you do that in the past for the Sun is that when they finish up, we've asked them any person from the EA that they quote in their article that they have to send. They won't send you the whole article, but if they're quoting you, they have to send you your quote for a few.
And they typically,
I was going to say, they typically do that
98% of the time. We fell into that 2% where they just butchered it. So I did circulate that around so everybody could see that. If you have any other questions or other comments, I'm happy to field those as well. I guess we'll move to a UA update. I wasn't at the last night's UA meeting due to some work conflict, but if Steve, you want to give an update, or Gina, anybody else who was there?
Well, there was a lot of like really interesting information that was shared. But the part that I thought was worth mentioning is it sounds like there will be a directive at some point for assemblies to revisit the smoke-free campus concerns directly from President Shorten. I think they did mention that that's going to be discussed so that we should discuss it in the spring, but I figured it would be good to have it on the radars in case people wanted to be thinking about it over Christmas break.
Was there a sort of a sense of an assembly? Like, was it, this is crazy, this is great, this is, I don't know?
What Jim, it came to Jim through, from a constituent to the university assembly, and what Jim said last time was he's going to send it out to the constituent assembly to see if there is interest in doing anything with it. So at this point, and you'll, so you'll be receiving that. So we'll just come to each of the different assemblies.
May I say that smoke-free campus means you can't smoke anywhere and even in boardrooms? Would that be the case? Perfect. Would that include electronic cigarettes as well?
I don't know the answer.
Yeah. What was the question?
Sorry, electronic cigarettes as well.
the new way to smoke?
Well, because we had a situation with an employee using heat-safe
in the building. Then New York State just ruled against that, right? That you can't smoke inside, or Tompkins County.
Right, and that's what we had to go through. If you look at university policy has nothing on electronic cigarettes. So we had to go to county policy.
Any other discussion, or wait till we get further information from the UA?
I should say that of the Calgary conversation about the people last night, I mean, everybody realized that the employer center would be the one most that would grapple with the hardest decision.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there was a lot of sensitivity given already that there was a lot of conversation happening. So a lot of precedent, a lot of, we were in a different age today than we were even 5 years ago. We still discussed the entire previous time. So, issue that will be coming.
Okay.
There was another, another issue that is going to come up again, it looks like, is set up possibly that it will come around again. There was a several compelling conversations and presentations, I guess, at the
Sustainability Summit.
Right. That was compelling enough to have folks say, you know what, we know that conversations took place last year at the University Assembly, they're going to take it up again, knowing that each of the constituent assemblies did pass a resolution last year in favor of that.
Not all.
Hmm?
Not all directly.
Okay.
Yeah. Because ours was in favor of more exploratory on the topic as opposed to a direct statement of divestment. So if those are topics that people find interesting, you know, feel free that you don't have to wait till they come from the UA. We're happy to start the conversation early. If it's something that you're interested in, please bring it to the table. We'd love to have, you know, as full and robust agendas as possible with, you know, topics that are really led by all of you. So, and if there's anything else.
Well, can I just make a comment from our last CJT closing judicial committee that was brought up, which I thought was really interesting? We're just tackling a lot about notice procedures for protesting and stuff. And I thought Greg actually brought up a good point. Where do staff get into it? Like, are we allowed to take part in protesting? Do we lose our jobs? Those kind of things. And so that's the issue that, you know, from the bottom of view, that settles back the idea that I definitely welcome.
And that's a very present conversation, I think, at the UA and the CJC. So if anybody's interested about staff's rights, staff ability to protest, you know, faculty have tenure, right? And faculty have this sort of free thought, this environment that really is conducive to challenging the system and those sorts of things. Staff, on the other hand, it's not that way. And so I think I tried to advocate at that meeting, just to make sure that if we're at the University Assembly, which is representative of all of our constituent groups, that we're talking about how it fits with everyone, not just students or faculty. So I don't know if there is a solution, but I think it's worth having maybe a more robust discussion on staff's rights during charged issues. It doesn't have to necessarily be the current political things we're talking about, but something may come up in the future that you may be really passionate about and want to say, you know what, I want to go stand on Hope Plaza with my friends, my colleagues, my peers, whatever, and, you know, exercise my right. So, something to think about. And a little update, I had the opportunity to go to the kickoff meeting for the Transportation Advisory Task Force, representing the EA. That is something that Bridget Brady, right? Is it Bridget Brady? From Transportation is sort of chairing. It's something that she and Q had discussed, something in her previous role before joining Cornell. She had had great success with. This is a group that will meet for this year. One of the major topics is looking at the TCAT funding gap. And how that will be made up and what some of the strategies are. And it won't be a policy creating or voting, but it will be more in an advisory capacity, coming up with solutions and sort of passing that on. It is represented with all the shared governance bodies on there, as well as university treasurer, some folks in campus planning, some faculty that are in transportation planning. So really robust topics. So if there's anything that specifically relates to transportation that you'd like me to bring up at those meetings, please feel free to forward it on. You know, a lot of buses, parking, costs, all that sort of stuff will be reviewed. It's not just about TCAT funding. So any ideas, any thoughts, please pass them along. I'm happy to share them with the group. I know BJ had an update from the President's Climate Action Summit.
So I was only able to attend one of the sessions, but it was the breakout session, which I think is the most working. So I just want to give you a few of the pitches that were there. Just give an overview. The whole of the conference broke out into separate tables, just kind of formed working groups on individual topics. So as opposed to everyone's kind of talking about sustainability as a whole, there were specific things that we can work on. Let me tell you the ones I attended that I thought related to staff, and then let me give you the other ones. And then if you have something that you're interested in, I'm going to post this also in the box, because there are specific contact people that if you're interested in working on so-and-so, here's a contact person that's leading that, so at least it's a good way for us to get involved as well. So the one I sat in on was the staff performance management integration with Chris Halliday. One of the staff skills for success now includes sustainability. So promoting that and just making sure that's kind of in our performance dialogue. So our staff members identifying that in their workplace. So the fact that it's part of a performance dialogue now, I think, helps really permeate the concept of sustainability across staff members. But here are some of the other topics. There was sustainability literacy, behavior, and measurement, so talking about culture shifts in campus. Greening your office, so the green labs, or the green office certification, green lab certification, so there's also greening your lab. The creation of a student sustainability resource center, talking about college commitment and dean engagement, creating curriculum and learning outcomes for specific majors. The building energy standards and how different facilities are incorporating that, an energy conservation initiative, the travel offset program, so right now talking about air travel mostly, creating an internal carbon seed, renewable energy procurement, the deep geothermal heating project, just fundraising and development in general, and potentially hiring a VP level to organize funding and sustainability plans. Transportation, so all the, I think it's all TCAT now, it's actually part of Google Transit now, so it's all live, so that's another corporation there. Talking about space planning, so how is space utilized on campus. Forest management, so doing carbon sequestration in trees on campus. And then developing local community offsets as well, too. So we're actually doing a lot towards sustainability on campus. I think this was a good measure of what this campus is doing to become a leader in the field. But I think, you know, like anything, there's always more work to be done, and so this is a good way for you to get involved. So I'll post these on here with the contact information, just kind of some of the summaries. But I think it's a good way to at least just lend a voice as well, too. So did anyone else attend any parts of that climate summit?
No. Okay. I should mention that I'm the co-chair of the Climate Change Campus Committee. Mm-hmm. So, and we so if there is anyone who's interested, you know, in general, and we define sustainability not just as the community side of things, but we also look at sustainability in terms of our staff over time, are we building leadership, are people coming to work energized? There's a much broader, you know, social justice issues, equitable compensation issues. We're defining sustainability in a much broader way. So if there's anyone who's interested, side of the sustainability team. And unfortunately, I attended this kind of a pilot training program and had to go to all sessions, and I had five meetings at the same time. Yeah, I couldn't make it. So it's fun because I know the conference is very good.
Yeah.
Any questions for BJ on that? No?
Cool.
I think that covers all the additions. BJ is going to lead in a structure discussion. One of the things out of our retreat, and BJ can probably tee this up a little bit better than I can, But just looking at our structure, our makeup, you know, I think in the spring it's, you know, our goal to maybe jump a little bit deeper into a charter review and some charter updates to make sure that it accurately reflects sort of our current operations and maybe any direction that we'd like to see the organization go. So, BJ, I'm going to turn it over to you. Do you not want to be left by BJ?
All right, so I would like to preface this discussion. Came out of this retreat, if you all go back to, was that August, July, somewhere there. I think we're all really energized, had lots of good ideas about thinking where the assembly could go and what are things that we could do. So, I want to preface, this is really just a discussion. There is no, we're going to change this tomorrow, nor do you have to come up with an outcome at the end of the day, but I think we should really start talking about what the EA is and who we represent and how we represent that. So any ideas are welcome to the table. This isn't meant to be a discussion about your performance or how you're doing and who you represent. It's really thinking about the body as a whole and how can we best represent the staff members at the university. So, keeping that in mind, I just want to show you a little bit about what our current structure looks like. So right now there are 19 members, and the seats are allocated this way. So there are 6 exempt seats, 6 non-exempt seats, 6 at-large seats of anyone, and a seat representing the Geneva campus. Of those 19 seats, we cover obviously the 2 job classes, so exempt and non-exempt. And then from the different units and colleges, this is what we represent right now. So we have a staff member from AAP, staff member from engineering, staff member from facilities, 1 Geneva staff member who is part of the Cal system, 2 staff members from Cal's, 2 members from Human Resource and Safety Services, 3 members from Hotel, 4 members from Student Academic Services, and 4 members from the Vet College. So when I first looked at this, I saw, I don't know if we're necessarily representing all the different staff members across campus. Keeping that in mind. There are lots of different ways to organize staff at Cornell. I think this is kind of the biggest tackle is how do we effectively represent all the different classifications of staff members and all their different affiliations, whether it is with their college, whether it was the unit, with their job family, with their location. There's lots of different ways to divide them. Colleges and units, according to one, there are roughly 25 different distinctions. That comes from the Toward New Destinations, which recognizes A&D, Engineering, Arts, Cal, Budget and Planning, Computer Information Sciences, Continuing Education Summer, Services, Facilities, the Graduate School, Financial Affairs, the different colleges, so Johnson, Law, ILR, there's a Research Division, the University Council, so that's according to one. The Institutional Research and Planning Office recognizes 8 different occupational groups, which are clerical and secretarial, service and maintenance, skilled craft, technical paraprofessional, research, library, SAS, and facilities. So that's another way that they recognize. And then human resources recognizes different job families. So there's academic support, administration, alumni affairs and development, athletics, auxiliary services, communications and marketing, finance, budget and planning, health, human resources, information technology, library and museum, service facilities, student services, and technical services. So I've just thrown a lot of different labels and groupings at you, and everyone's kind of looking at me with this head of like this. So what I would like to start to talk about is how do we capture all these things? What do we feel are kind of the overarching groupings of staff members? And recognizing those, how do we make sure that there are groupings that don't get left out? And Pilar's not here right now, but I know, you know, last year we talked about how do non-professorial academic staff members get recognized. And I think that was a really big lead in into thinking about how we represent the staff as a whole. So how do we best represent staff at Cornell? Thinking about what organization groups already exist, who is not currently represented by our current structure, and how do we encourage participation? The last one is a big one for me because I think we have had uncontested elections now in the 2 times that I've been a part of the assembly. So my question is also, is our representational structure, meaning that people aren't interested because they don't feel like they have anything to contribute, and how can we change that so more people are invested in this organization? So before I just kind of open up to an open discussion, I want to show you some of the IRP numbers, just to give us some ideas of groupings on campus. So this is from Institutional Research and Planning. If you at all like numbers or are big fans of data, like I sometimes geek out to, this is a great website that has all kinds of things all about Cornell. I think it gives us a really solid idea of what this campus is made up of. So right now, as you can see, the latest data they have, sorry about that, from the fall of 2013, most employees are employed by the different colleges. We have some broken down to the research sectors. There's a smaller portion by the library. I would say administrative units and student academic services are the other kind of big departments there, followed by facilities. So this is kind of the majority of where staff members fall, according to IRB. Looking at raw numbers here, again, we see about 7,000 staff members. Again, the big three I see here are the different colleges, student academic services, and facility services, other admin.
I'm just going to turn the lights
on. Oh, sure. The other numbers I'd like to show you here are... So by occupational group, again, IRP divides into these occupational groups. And again, we see that the campus is really heavily represented by office administrative support, which makes sense. But also, I was surprised to see that services and sales, I'm not really sure what sales incorporates. But then again, followed by computer engineering, and then also just some instruction numbers as well, too. So there's some of those.
Department of Labor breakdown.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
That IRP has to report on. Great. So it's not needed to be those.
Yeah.
Government.
Thanks. So again, I want to thank Linda. Linda sent me some of this information, kind of pointing the right track there too. So again, so this is a government breakdown of job classifications on campus. And the last one.
Linda, do you know what sales
they give a hold? They're very broad stroke, and they give a hold if you go into the Department of Labor site. You know, so they give like a general description of each of those.
And DJ, sorry, is this online? You can access it.
Mm-hmm. So a website put on the box as well, too, so it's all there.
Thank
you. Yep.
And this will be updated to 2014 data within the next 2 to 3 weeks, by the way. You're working on it right now.
So again, this one breaks it down by college, so seeing staff members by college as well, too. And again, units, you see computer information science in there as well. So those are some of the different statistics we see in there. Oh, here's last on the occupational groups as well. And there's also organizational sectors. So I guess that's how I kind of wanted to start the conversation, looking at some of these numbers. What do people feel are kind of some higher level affinities outside of just your own personal office, but what are some larger organizational structures that you feel your office represents, or your, you as a staff member represent?
I have a question, just really.
Sure.
In your own words, what do you think is the mission of the EA? Because I think that will help determine what the makeup should be.
Really?
Yeah.
So I think it's a great conversation to have. I didn't
know. No, not like that, but like, because I mean, like, I agree, like we might need more admin staff, but. Like, is our mission to be an advocate for benefits? Is that our mission? I don't know. Because that's one of the things I'm grappling with. What is the mission of the EA?
Well, I think with benefits, we interpret benefits. Not so much as benefits are there, but we need to interpret them. Because I think that's for the website and it's hard if you don't know what that is.
With the mission that
you
Do you think it's a matter of the differences between some staff being
direct charge, official charge of the DEA? So, I mean, I really can't articulate, like, when people come up to me, like, what does the DEA do? I'm like, we represent all the staff. They're like, oh, what? Because I think that goes back to when Ulysses was here, and he was like, there's specific things that like the student assembly is specifically in charge of, like student, you know, finance committee, like your student fees, we directly are in control of that. We are directly, faculty are directly in control of the union. But I'm like, what's the EA?
Finding legislative authority here. So currently the EA's legislative authority applies to human resources and anything related to personnel policy. And I know there's a specific charge in our charter here. So under authority and responsibility, we cover university policies of protecting employees, facilitating an information exchange, establishing committees, conducting public hearings, and selecting members. And then these are all just kind of interfaces. So I'd say the main thing is here is we enhance and contribute opportunities to affect policies affecting employees. So I feel like that was given to us by our charter.
Only in my opinion, most of my, well, all my staff are UAW. So I see the employee assembly as for people that are not UAW. You know, we're here to make sure that the policies are fair, that they're carried out equally. That if someone comes to us, that we are the voice that makes the arguments, that makes the upper government listen to what's really going on there. Because if you look at it, my own, this is only my own personal opinion. Mary Appleman, President Horton, Susan Murphy, the Provost, et cetera, are looking at their level. We have to make sure that we keep pushing our level up to make sure they see all the levels, not just what's in front of them. That's what I feel the employee assembly does.
I think it also affects bargaining with staff. So in that, a lot of the policies kind of work on a Me Too basis, so that if it's something passed for the non-union employees and the union employees, they go, it's not the same thing here.
No, I think Nancy touched on my thoughts about the union.
And I think another point for us is that it's really about raising awareness and clarifying a lot of the policies, because the language for them, as you read them, is a little complicated. We're trying to break it down and make it easy for everybody to interpret it, I guess.
Are there, I guess, so I'm hearing serving as more of a communication vessel for human human resources policies to staff. In terms of, I guess that's one side of it. I see that as information exchange.
Mm-hmm.
The first part there, the 2.1, the university policies affecting employees. How do you see this organization working with human resources, who I feel is the primary driver of policy? How do we interface with an official organization like that?
Well, when I read this, the first thing that came to my mind was the EA suggestion that people get 3 hours a week of release time. I feel like that was that's not a tangible example that's within our charge, that we made recommendations to the president. The president didn't like our recommendation, but this is really what's the issue. I guess that's what I'm seeing, and it's a tangible example. And I think, therefore, like when you look at the release time issue and how it affected exempt versus non-exempt staff differently, and how different units interpreted and made reactionary decisions based upon it, I can see that then our body's not diverse enough, because we all can't talk about how this release time impacts the different job families, the different job responsibilities, the different positions and things like that. So using that as a tangible example, I don't think we do have the body representation in order to clearly address and talk about the impact on all. I mean, theoretically, but I think I'm not a technician. I'm not an administrative assistant. I can't say what needs to be able to do all this stuff.
I'm curious to know if we're doing what we should be doing, going out and talking to them. I mean, I know I go back and I talk to these people within my little circle there, but are we just not being broad enough in the work that we're doing? So like Linda and I have talked about, okay, she and I are both too broad. Her experience in HR is completely different, I think, than my experience in HR, because we work very separately. Should we be reaching out to groups and calling meetings and bringing people in to get their thoughts on the team and bringing that back here? We're not doing that. I don't know anybody really doing that. If somebody is, I'd love to hear how that works.
Actually, if I may, I think we're talking, yes, and it goes to BJ, one of your first slides in your presentation, and that is, even though you may not have been elected in uncontested elections, everybody around this table represents a constituency at this table. Do you know who they are? And that's the question. And if there's a better way to know who they are so that you can have those conversations, then maybe it is restructuring. Maybe it is going by, you know, using the GPSA, they do field. They have, you know, so that maybe by college or unit, there should be an exempt and a non-exempt. Maybe by the job structure, you know, to make sure that everybody can have a person at the table that can have those conversations. Because, and it's a question that I think gets to Curtis, your very, very valid point. What is it? You're asking people to join the EA. To do what? Well, I think we've articulated to what, but if you don't know who you're representing, then it gets very difficult. Then we're having conversations here that don't go down, and they don't really have an effect when we get the president saying that's not going to work. You could, whatever it is, the response, taking for example the leave time, the wellness leave time, part of the responsibility then lies with explaining it, going back and explaining to your constituencies what the response was and why. And that's the information that you might have in this exchange. But it's very difficult if it ends here. And there's really no really, really good communication vehicle, you know, beyond. You know, we have the conference and the newsletter, but those don't reach everybody, and they're not really why you're here at this table.
You know, I guess to me, one of the things that, I mean, it seems hard, we talk about trying to get, you know, even in looking at some of the models, and say, okay, my job classification. Again, the experience of an administrator over here is going to be very different than the admin over there. Do we maybe look at a model that is physical location, kind of like facilities as zones? So for me, I'm an EHOB, and you're familiar with us, even though we're both in the same organization. So is my charge as an EA member to represent the folks at East Hill, and there's about 500 employees up at East Hill, and it's my responsibility as an EA member to call a monthly meeting to say, this is what we're talking about as an EA, these are the things that are coming up, come to this, talk to me about it, and then I bring that back here. And maybe that's a model to consider looking at. You know, Bridget is over in RPCC, there's lots of folks over that way. Mm-hmm. And then people might be able to say, oh, it's in my building, we're the building next door, I can go and do that. If I'm representing HR people and they work down in Bay Hall and now they have to take a bus up to East Coast Plaza, they're not going to come here. So maybe thinking about looking at zones as a way to represent. Then no matter who your body is, your body represents the zone.
We also, like, we took the responsibility of being a EA member to take it to smaller committees, like the veterinary committee that was formed, to make sure that they were addressing the wellness policy because we had a unique situation, which they did. We couldn't get the release time because we're on clients all the time, so then they brought wellness to us, you know, and had made it accessible, more accessible to hospital employees. But then there's also smaller subcommittees that we all belong to that help get the message out, like the safety committee meeting at the diagnostic lab. I brought up the factors of the Green Initiative and Green Lab for them to make sure that, to invite them up, meet with our smaller committee and how to do that safely without, you know, a lot of people sharing a lot of facts. So the getting it down to the home level, you know, down to the college level as a representative of the EA seems to be working pretty well.
Well, that's part of the conversation. I've heard that kind of structure. So in student life, there's a student life advisory committee, which has students, all different representatives on that. And I saw that as a really good model of here's a localized group that has representatives from all constituencies affected by that, but they'll have some common purpose. And so I think I would like to try and find some kind of model that gets to that. So is that by zone? You know, are people most affected by issues just if you are on Central Campus, or if you're on East Hill, if you're in Geneva, if you're in Tech Campus? Is that where people most feel strongly tied to? Or are there other representations that people would come to the table in order for issues that represent that group to show them credit?
The other thing is there are employees here who don't want to be meddled with or want to be represented. They want to come into their job, go home, and that's it. And unless they have a problem, it becomes an issue. Then they need somewhere to go to. Because we have these subcommittees and all that, and we have people, you know, that don't want to be participants, they don't need their lawyers, you know, and so on and so forth. So you can't vote everyone in.
Which I think is fine. I think I would rather just have a structure so when something does happen, we know where to send that person. Mm-hmm. I think that's the hardest part, is if an issue comes up and we have no idea where to send that person, that helps them.
But when we get questions like, well, what do? Unless you take the time to look it up yourself as well, not everyone can be fluent at the process.
Mm-hmm.
One suggestion I have is maybe can we incorporate more referendums or ideas given up. So our real time is that I'm thinking about this smoke-free campus. To me, my constituency, I don't know who that is and whether it makes sense. I know I personally don't smoke. So it would be an easy referendum for me to say, yes, let's pass this. But at the same time, even if I go ask my basic colleagues, my limited group are like people like me. They probably don't smoke. They're probably in a certain class. And we're not getting all votes. So maybe one of the things to be a new mission is that we develop referendum. Why can't we just, part of the election, have a question. How do you feel about a smoke-free campus? And if 90% of people come back and say smoke-free campus, I think that's the world's best, better representation of how staff feel about it versus the people in the room and trying to, and telling me I should go back and talk to you.
Yeah.
And I think that's about HR policies, and I think allowing people, the masses, to vote on it to a certain degree might actually bring more people and make it feel more part of the process. But I think we saw that when we did the staff engagement, I think that was the first time where I saw staff together really felt like they're being part of the process.
There was a lot of conversation
yeah.
about how
to
do it together.
Yeah. I would just want to put out there that whatever we do, because I think it's fantastic idea, we just want to make sure that we're not inadvertently excluding. And I know I requested the message that they were on campus, and my by far lowest response rates were our new staff.
significantly are, and it was an online survey. And so I'm trying to think of how we could capture voices of individuals who are able to send it out as an online survey. I know the staff review, we send out paper copies as well. So I would just want to make sure that we're not inadvertently excluding the population. Sometimes I feel the very structure of our meeting is inadvertently excluding a big piece of our population, because for hourly employees to get out twice a month to come here, you know, some have very good supervisors and are supportive. Many do not have supervisors who cannot handle because they're in support issues or disputes or whatever. So that's just something I think we need to think about, is are we inadvertently excluding populations, and maybe we need to do everything we can to make sure we can include it as possible in our outreach and approach.
There are survey and some of our newspaper things that can go on to a ballot box or something.
The other thing is, regardless of the structure, I like the idea of my place. I also like the idea that, you know, in terms of subdividing my interests, any of those structures will help address that problem of inclusion. Because right now, if you say, well, the people we really, we need to bring all the voices, and the voices that aren't being heard are the voices that can feel as if they're empowered in any sense. But ironically, it's the very ones that are not empowered to just come here. So these structures in place will then sort of force the issue in terms of supervisors and stuff, and bring it more immediately to the supervisor. Yeah, because it's moved here now, and it's not just way off here someplace. I think it's a great direction to go in.
I was just going to, following up on the referendum idea, the essay right now is addressed in their charter, but there's no process that has been outlined. So I've been working with them very closely. And sort of to Linda's point, a referendum needs to, in order for it to come to an election or to a vote, has to have a certain number of folks behind it. It can't just be, we're going to decide to have a referendum. It usually needs a body, or a percentage, or a particular number of folks. And I guess going back to what Nancy just said, if, Curtis, you were representative of the hotel school, then, you know, maybe you could have a local assembly meeting there, so that it's everybody, not just your cohort of folks, that you can bring that and whether you need to get signatures or however it's done, but the mechanism actually involves touching people before you even get to an election, to a vote. And I think I love the mechanism of the referendum. I think it really could address a lot of the issues, but it's still the question of how to represent everybody is still very present. Otherwise, you get a very vocal minority that can change policy, and that may not be representative of everybody.
It's just like a reflection of our own government, though. You can't get everyone in the country to vote.
Everybody has the right to vote.
Right.
That's not true. We have criminal
representation. All right, so if I can kind of steer us back into what are some areas that we feel represent us. So I'm hearing like geographic locations, so that might be different campuses. I think I've also heard colleges, so different med college, whatever that might be. What are some other affiliations that you feel as staff members you feel a connection to?
Really? I just asked the question. As a staff member?
Yeah. So like when we talk about why are black women leaving at a higher rate than other populations, I feel definitely or when we have policies about, like, should we add domestic partnership to a benefit? As a person queer, I feel like that's very important. So I think social identity helps inform policies and why it needs to work.
Sure.
So I think the essay has similar feet, don't they?
They do.
On diversity related.
Yeah.
That's
a good idea. That large feet for, they have LGBTQ, they have women's.
I think maybe like
Sorry, what was that last one? There are some, let me pull up some more numbers here. So yeah, I mean, they do have, by numbers here, there is an age distribution, come to think of it, as well. If you look at age distributions, that's the number.
You might know a lot of it. When people talk about position as far as like entry level, mid level, senior, administrator, things like that, are those official classifications or is this just based on your role and where you work at?
I think that people who are hourly and 2 hours as far as a different, where they have practicing. So I think that some of them comes to them, not hourly anymore, that they feel a very big difference. So I think that's something that, you know, people themselves, we typically, when we're kind of breaking down the population, that way we pretty much really know them. The first pair of exams, up to, you know, the rock G, and then, you know, upper management and then executive. So there is definitely a breakdown that we do that kind of follows the Department of Labor breakdown. But I think from employees, there's a huge change from when they go to an hourly to a transfer salary. Just from the employees' perception, I don't know if anyone else has any other.
Do you think that maybe bands would be?
Bands, to some degree, there are, in the E band, there are some that are hourly and some that are not. So the E band kind of is that separation point.
Maybe the classification number,
They will, they're
defined.
So it's usually on my salary grade. And then the union, because the marketing unit kind of sees so that actual Q4 and as a supervisor. That gardening unit, there's definitely, I guess, differences of risk and exposure to supervision.
Maybe some of that could be individual contributor versus manager. Because they are looking at those aspects.
I was just going back to your comments earlier, the value of being able to go back and talk to your constituency, whether that, having them either local or a cohort that is easily identifiable will make or break that success, I think.
And I just think, talking about the whole college piece versus, for me, I don't have a college. So my constituency is spread out all over the place. So the building model kind of works. I mean, our building is primarily HR, environmental safety type thing. For you, you're a college, but by definition of your location, most of your colleges is within that same location, so it kind of fits both models. And so my thing, I think, mm-hmm. where you do it.
That's it. I mean, I'm sure the end result of this will be some kind of a hybrid exchange difference, which I'm sure we'll be talking about. To help us a little bit in terms of, what information do you need to help yourself make a decision? What information do you need? About this issue right now. So everyone here, as you're kind of mulling this over and you're thinking, before I have any kind of opinion, what are some pieces of information that you need?
One of the thoughts I had is we can have representation of voice by actual voting members who sit here, and we can also have that through committees who have a voting member or two on who can then represent a particular interest group. Are we thinking that we're specifically thinking about membership sitting around the table, or are we trying to think of, in general, how to engage multiple interest
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the number that really struck me is when I was looking at who we represent, we don't represent everyone on campus, just sitting at the table. We don't even have certain colleges that we represent here that are certain
But I
I would argue to that would be saying, like, I can only represent those folks. But if I have someone who works in arts and sciences and they have an issue and they come to me, I'm still representing them. I may not know all of their issues, but I would still be representing them. So maybe we need to look at it not as, because I work for this department, that is who I represent.
So, yeah, I would say, I got Dylan and Gina, but I would say in response to that, for me, I think it's speaking on behalf of someone and having that person advocate for themselves, in my opinion, are really different things. And that's why I wanted to start that conversation. Because for me, as much as I can talk to someone who is, you know, working in the facilities or working in financial services or working in human resources, I don't live that reality every day, so it's hard for me to accurately advocate for them in a setting like this. And so while I encourage everyone to do that, I think everyone should be speaking to people they come in contact with because of a representative public assembly. I think representing for someone and that person representing for themselves are different things. And so I think that's a distinction for me. Still in the future.
I'm sort of leaning towards favoring a district thing, but I would want to know the population geographically. Like you had a number that student academic services have a high population, and we're also representing with a high number of representatives here. But where are they geographically? So if the district thing is a fair distribution of representation. Yeah.
Other
information that people
report to us? Do you think that one of the things might be just increasing voter participation in the EA elections? There's no beginning, you said you just selected to a few. But if we can really get to a point where people are actually participating and we actually have real elections where there's a general great body of people and people. Maybe that might solve some of the issues. I don't know.
I agree with that, but I think for me it goes back to you're not going to participate if you don't feel like you're buy-in from that organization. And I think that's the fact. If we create a structure where, oh, I'm going to participate in this because this person represents me and they'll represent my ideas, I think there's a greater chance of participation in general, as opposed to we can try and drum up all the participation that we want, which is like something I feel that we've done. But it's just, I feel like we've gone in circles, and I want to try something new. And so my thing is, as opposed to attacking the symptoms, why not try to attack the cause? So I'm going to go with Steve and then Sonny, and then, yeah.
Can we maybe look into or discuss limitations on the size of the EA and how those numbers can work out? I'm sort of in favor of like a better model of positive representation. especially looking at, you know, we have four from SAS, but SAS is a gigantic thing versus maybe a smaller college that they still have four representatives or something. Having those more fairly spread out, but it could be exactly other people.
Yeah, I heard that 200 people.
Yeah.
You know, that's well, we're just a spec here and compared to what you're all doing. Yeah. And I know people in DC, I know people in the janitorial. The admin staff, that's what I'm representing. It's a bill.
Yeah.
Really exciting about it.
I just had a question for both of you, kind of trying to get some of this over. But how many people came to the EA because someone who was already seated on the EA encouraged them? I'm just curious that, you know, we're targeting people and we're pulling them in, so maybe, you know, when you talk about the election and getting people interested, maybe we have to get out there and be talking to more people to drum up more people to talk. You know, it's kind of a, I just don't think we talk to people.
Yeah.
And I have something to say about, I'm thinking visibility, like, this is one of the representatives. Do they maybe have an issue with somebody? When I think of our residential program, and Steve will let us know, at least that this is going on and that's going on. So I know if I had an issue, that's what to go to, and it's not about what level you are, or a G, or an F, or we know Steve is what going to do to that time. So maybe the challenge is to let people become more visible, then it's in the zone of the unit. Does everybody know? Maybe the one that's doing it. And that speaks to what Gina is saying, how well do you know these people? It just is a matter of creating your own visibility.
and maybe but then he will start to rule too.
I'll ask them too. I think it's great that we should encourage ourselves to be more vocal with our constituency, but I think people still have a hard time understanding what their constituency is. I represent at large staff members, so I essentially represent every staff member. Which is fine. I mean, I think there should be at large seats, but how do I? I mean, people don't know if I have to talk to almost everyone, but that still only cover a small fraction of the voters out there. So I want to make sure that people that I don't come in contact with know they have a say. Gina.
That's a two quick things. Hanging out with Linda said, really reminded me. I've been in the assembly now a year, which went by so quickly. But one of the things when I first started was. A goal that I had, because I knew nothing about the Assemblies of Shared Governance at Cornell before I started this stuff, except for my casual colleague, Nancy, taking some of it. I knew she did the conference. And one of the goals was to really, and this is more broad than the EA, but everybody at Cornell had representation in shared governance. Most don't know it. Some can choose to not ever participate, but they should know that when and if they ever wanted to, that there is representation. Identifying the channels for that are people. There's a process, yeah, and that's what our job is. Amy and I will take care of the process, but it is people. And so narrowing and knowing who your constituents are so that you can bring those is a goal, it's an objective, and it's lofty because it's very, very difficult here. There's not a culture of participation. For the EA particularly, HR does a great job with policy, and there's not a whole lot of issues that will come in the same way that the essay deals with, you know, softer toilet paper, or some of the bigger issues, but it's much different. So it's intertwined with how to get people involved is what is it that we're asking folks to do. And I do think, Curtis, going to your very first question, that's where I think that they are. That's where everything overlaps, is you get the right people at the table and all of a sudden the conversation will form itself. And who those people should be is the question right now. I think that the zone idea is good, and what Steve was suggesting is then have some specific at-large constituencies, whether I love the age, you know, some of the different minority representation, making sure that by zone and by reflection, everybody has a person.
Well, smokers could be part of that. They could be considered either a disability or a minority. And 90% of the people would say, well, no, yeah, I agree, I don't smoke either. But for me to tell someone, I saw two ladies on their way down that are out crossing the highway smoking, and now that's going to be a disability because if they can't smoke anywhere on campus, and it's an addiction. So we cannot forget that.
So
1% of our population that smokes, is it fair for us to tell them, no, they can't smoke during the whole day, they're going to have to drive downtown? Not that, it's not fair either. So, yeah, that's it. I'm going on campus.
I was
about to
say,
I was going
to say that for us.
You can help
write
the referendum.
So I'm
going
to Nancy and Steve.
There's two groups I don't want to have get lost in the mix. One are the people in facilities and one are the dining folks. They're kind of in two different worlds, but what they share that's different than the rest of us is that their lunch hour doesn't fall during our lunch hour. The shift workers work a whole different thing and they oftentimes get lost because of that schedule difference.
And so Leslie Meyerhoff and I used to, and she and I run that TA together. We used to go and do time clock meetings, like quarterly, and go to hit all the time clocks on campus.
So that might be something then there's a representative that goes to time clock meetings.
Yeah.
Can you maybe expand a little bit on how our current at-large members are defined? Are they just extra seats that can be filled by voters?
They are essentially just at-large seats, so anyone can run for them as long as they are.
Okay, because the way it currently looks like it's split pretty evenly with the three groups, so exemption, exemption, and at large. So potentially the at large could be all exempt and we could have a two-thirds population.
Yeah, that was the one number I didn't have because I don't think it can access people. So I knew we had six and six, but then that last six, I couldn't peek into things to see what that breakdown was. But part of me feels like that. That was interesting.
That was intentional, too. Under your time when we were expanding, so the whole idea originally was a while ago, it was very easy. We wanted to move up to a 26. About 26, we wanted 26 member EA from, what was it, 15? Well, 13. We went from 13 and then we went to 19. We like 26 may be way too much in terms of trying to figure out. And we thought that we'll add those two at large because a lot of them were just, it was like only two, no, actually there was no at large. It was just exempt, non-exempt, and the Geneva. Yeah, and then we just moved to non-exempt, exempt, and then at large to try to get more.
So one of the problems from the history of the EA and still have seen vital members for the employees is also the growth that we've experienced. I mean, the veterinary college, just as a whole, in the 20 years since I've been here, you used to know everybody, and now that's totally impossible. So the representation becomes very more vital, but also just having smaller subjects in there that have more outreach among all those different people now. Those are situations when employees from everywhere come together. far as our grant goes.
Other points of information that we'd like to see in such research?
I think it would be helpful to see when buildings are have like zoning already that they do. So it might be helpful for us to see how they're doing it and see if their model can be applicable to us. And I think if we have staff with the amount of employees in this building, then we can sort of figure out how it's best structured it for ourselves.
I'd be interested in maybe looking at like similar institutions that have shared governance on the level that we do to see how they do that.
Okay. Thanks. This was really helpful. I think this is, again, raising a lot of good points, but I hope we can move forward a little bit. Our next meeting is in 2 weeks. I will not be here, unfortunately. But again, we'd like to continue this conversation. If you have other resolutions or items that you'd like to bring up as well, please send those to either me or Greg. I know some folks are talking about Green Office Initiative. I heard another discussion about staff retention. And then I also had a meeting structure set as well. So, Kurt.
Is that the meeting where the staff retention was talking about? Like that?
We can schedule that as well, too. That's why.
We used to get reports from all committees too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe we want to pull that around so I have a few things.
Okay.
And I'll send out an email and I'll explain.
Yeah. Again, my goal, so as a vice chair, I set agenda, so I don't want to just talk about what I want to talk about, which could be all kinds of things. I want to discuss what you have. So please always feel free to send me those items.
Okay. Regarding the committee, so I have several of the other actually in the agenda, we'll have
is there a motion to?
I motion to adjourn.
Yeah. All in favor? All opposed? No opposition? There you go. Thanks, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.